Good morning. I think I've shared this story before, but I don't think everybody's heard it. So I had a friend a long time ago. We'll call him Sean, just to not get confused. I'm going to say friends a few times. Anyway, this friend named Sean, somebody had written him a letter of complaint, of reproof, concerns that they had in his life. Several pages, just listed off these things. Sean had moved away, and the friend sent him this letter of warning and concerns and stuff. And then at the end of the letter, it said, "I'm not even sure why I'm writing this letter to you. I know you're not going to receive it. You're not going to hear it. You're not going to care." So Sean responded. And in the beginning of Sean's letter, he said, and this will be a side point, he said that he believed that the way a person responds to being reproved or challenged is, he probably said, is like the mark of a person's maturity or spirituality, how they respond when somebody comes to them with a concern or a problem or reproof. And he said, so getting your letter was like finding gold in my mailbox. Like it was a golden opportunity for him to respond in a mature and spiritual way. And that just always stuck with me. And I'm sure I failed at it, but I try, whenever somebody tries to approach me with something, I try real hard to be like, okay, this is it. This is, I need to listen. I mean, it's just, I think it's pretty, can be difficult for any of us, but I try to exercise myself and, okay, be quiet, don't say everything you're thinking, hear what the person is saying, consider what they're saying, don't justify yourself, don't argue with them, don't point out their hypocrisy and their faults. Like, that's what carnal people do. Anyway, that's something that I'm working on, and it goes along. I just want to talk in general about that, recognizing that when, I'll read the very beginning of James, and I really like this, I never noticed this before, but he says, "James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greeting." Who knows what the next, anybody know what the next words are? "Count it all joy." I mean, it just like, there's no intro, he just, boom. "Hi, my name is James, this is to you, my brethren. Count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience." And that is just something like, he's telling you, like, this isn't natural. This is something that you have to do on purpose, and I'm trying to teach you to do this thing. When you fall into diverse temptations, don't do what your flesh would normally do. Don't do what comes natural. This is your opportunity for your faith to be tried and for patience to come forth. Like recognize the opportunity. Okay, somebody gave me this book written by a Jewish rabbi, I think a very kind of unpopular Jewish rabbi, and I think the reason that he's unpopular is, I was really blessed by the book. So much of the things that he taught, I would say, were very spiritual, not carnal at all, and I guess in general, maybe Jewish people tend to be carnal, and this man was really pushing a lot of the ways of Christ, especially in, it's a book about marriage. It's a book to men about marriage. I was really blessed by a lot of it. A couple of disclaimers. One, this is a Jewish, from a Jewish perspective, it's a parable. So it's not, I don't even think it's necessarily how they believe things work. And then, he makes some, I'm not sure if I edited them out. I tried to edit this and paraphrase it, abridge it, so I don't remember what all I left in. But he would be of the position or mind that marriage is necessary, and that if people don't get married, especially if a man chooses not to get married, he's just bound to fall short in his pursuit of God or spiritual life. That's an extreme position that I don't agree with, but just for context, that's his position, that's where he's coming from. Okay, He says, how is it spiritually beneficial to get married? Doesn't taking a wife and providing for her and your family's needs tie a person down to this lowly material world? The reason we are created is to walk with God and correct our souls. There's a Jewish principle, I can't remember what it's called, Tikkum or Kittim or something, and it's this principle that that we're here on earth to correct our soul, to deal with trials and stuff in a way that to correct our souls. This can only be achieved, there's a dogmatic statement I don't agree with, this can only be achieved within the context of the marital relationship and a peaceful home. Therefore, marriage is senseless without peace in the home. If one doesn't get married, he renders himself useless in this world, and even worse, the world cannot be corrected by him if he doesn't fulfill his purpose. Those are big dogmatic statements. There's some truth in them, but I don't agree with how he states it. Okay, so here's the parable. It's the parable of the holy celibate shlita, which is a fancy way of saying a holy Jewish man. I'm just going to call him the holy man. From a young age, the holy man decided that his soul yearned for truth. He concluded that his best move would be to remain single and find a house of study where he could devote his days to the study of the Bible. Soon he discovered a small, humble synagogue out in the country, far away from city life. He asked permission from the local rabbi to eat and sleep within the small synagogue. He said he would not disturb a soul, and the rabbi agreed. The holy man would sit quietly in the corner, learning day and night, with no disturbance or interruption. He barely left the synagogue. He limited his food intake to a few dry crusts of bread, denying himself any semblance of bodily pleasure. He drank water from the tap and slept on a hard wooden bench. Days and months and years transpired in this manner until the fateful day when the rabbi found the holy man lying lifeless on the floor of the synagogue. The entire village escorted the holy man, his coffin, on the way to its final resting place. They couldn't find adequate words to express his holiness and asceticism. All the villagers were certain that such an individual, totally withdrawn and separate from the cares of this world, was surely a great man of God. And in fact, the holy man agreed with the villagers. He was sure that he would have a grand reception into the afterlife, and that he would be escorted to his rightful station beneath the heavenly throne. But he suffered a terrible shock of disappointment. He was ushered to the heavenly courtroom, and the book of his life was opened. You learned a lot of Bible, and you prayed and made necessary blessings. You wore religious garments and observed the Sabbath and holidays. You fasted even more than required. However, with all these good deeds, you did not complete the mission that you were supposed to complete in the physical world. You memorized the Bible, but you failed to implement what you had learned. Had you married, you would have seen how far away you are from the man God wanted you to be. Didn't you know that the entire purpose of learning the Bible was to acquire faith? The level of faith that you acquired is extremely inadequate. Had you married, you would have been required to face a long list of trials and tribulations with your wife and family. When you would have failed these trials, you would have tarnished your soul with anger and complaining, and you would have seen how small your faith really is. You thought you trusted in God, but if you had been faced with the challenge of providing for wife and children, you would have seen just how frail your trust in God really is. The minute you would have earned some money, you would have developed a lust for money, and you would have forsaken God while trying to make more money. Patience? You never received a test of patience. Indeed, you are full of anger and impatience. Good character? Had you married, you would have seen how much you really need to improve, for you never had to compromise with or give in to another person. Maybe you see yourself as a happy person, but had you married, you would have seen how far you are from true peace and happiness that is not shaken by the demands and trials of family life. You have failed to learn the lessons that come between a man and his fellow man. You never gave yourself to another person. You never sacrificed a thing for another person, nor have you ever surrendered your desire to the desires of another person. You have no idea about the meaning of compromise, and you've done nothing to conquer your selfishness. The holy man stood before the throne while the fires of humiliation scorched his soul. He had utterly failed to perform his soul correction. He was forced to realize how badly he had failed to understand his task in the world by failing to take a wife. Sorry. If only he'd have married and raised a family while striving to build a peaceful home. Okay, so the point I'm trying to make is how we face diverse temptations of any kind. Dealing with our diverse temptations in a spiritual way is what brings forth fruit in our life. Marriage and family life is at least a major way, possibly the number one way God has chosen for us to accomplish His husbandry in us. And then I appreciate, I don't know if you caught the point that he made, like what good is being married if you're not going to strive for peace? And what benefit is there in the diverse trials of this life if we're not going to endeavor to walk in the Spirit? So in a married life, he'd say, like, sorry if I'm being redundant, but that a man needs to be striving for peace in the home, not just demanding his own way. And like that, I'll read a verse here, Luke 6:31. "And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And if you do good to them that do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. And if ye lend to them whom ye hope to receive, of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, and do good and lend, hoping for nothing, and your reward shall be great. And ye shall be the children of the Highest, for He is kind unto the unthankful and the evil." I want to point out here that Jesus is appealing to our desire for reward and treasure. I guess I've heard recently how somebody said something, "Oh, you're only serving God because you want the rewards, or you don't want to suffer the consequences." And I have a hard time with that. I mean, I feel like Jesus continually warns us about the consequences, trying to compel us to avoid them. And he tells us about the rewards and the treasures that come from walking in the Spirit, following Him, compelling us. We should, he says, lay up treasure in heaven. Like, lay it up, like, to where you have to build barns. Like, we should be like zealous for it, warring for it, sacrificing for it. Daniel told me, is Daniel here? Here he is. Daniel told me I should clarify. I'm not talking about like treasure chests up in a cloudy place when I say treasures. I believe that treasures are the same as the fruits of the Spirit, and that when we abide in Him, that walk in His ways, walk in the ways of the Spirit, that we're going to bring forth fruit. We're going to develop these things: patience, love, joy, and like that. And we want to be full of that stuff. So whenever a trial, a diverse temptation comes, and that's not just for married people. It can come at any time. Whenever this thing happens, where you're getting falsely accused, mistreated, abused, taken advantage of, being spoke to unkindly, or being asked to do something unjust, like. This is my whole point. I'm concluding here, just recognizing when that happens that, oh, here it is. This is that thing he talked about. Like it's we're all sitting here peacefully right now. Well, who knows what's going on in anybody's hearts? But we're not just always in diverse temptations. But when they come, what I'm trying to do, and I guess what I'm suggesting to you to consider trying to do intentionally altering your perspective, so that when that situation comes, you're like, "Oh, this is it. This is the diverse temptation, and if I walk in the Spirit, I can bring forth fruit. Now is this gold in my mailbox. so to speak. Anyway, I'm working on that habit. Maybe that's something that would be appealing to you. I'd appreciate any thoughts or corrections.
Yeah, I have some thoughts and comments to make. I appreciate parables a lot, but then when it comes into some areas, I'm not so sure about them. That's probably all I have to say about human parables. Jesus spoke in parables, but I'm not. He said why he does, and then I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm okay with speaking in parables one to another. But when it gets in the realms of how someone comes before a judge and how he gets judged, I don't know for sure how much I appreciate those things. But I really, really do appreciate your encouragements, your lecture on how to endure trials and things like that. I for sure wouldn't be able to say I hit the mark on that one all the time. But I see how important it is. I heard a pretty neat testimony yesterday. I like to talk with the guys that have the tractor place. They're in Verona. I kind of forget their name right now, but I met up with one of them at Race Brothers yesterday, and we talked for a long time, and then he was saying how his mom is old and 91 or 2, and she can't hardly keep things straight anymore. But one thing you can't do, like she's generally really calm, and you know, some people get old and grumbly. The only time she gets out of shape is when you say something about Dad, how mean he was to her sometimes. And he said his dad was rough. He would get rough with Mom sometimes, and she wouldn't cook the food right or do things right. He'd really just get on her, and us boys would get upset about him getting upset with Mom. But today, one thing you can't do is you can't go tell Mom that Dad was a bad guy, because she's in her old mind. She's that way. She's just like, Dad was a good guy. Father was a good guy. My husband was a good guy. And I wonder if she practiced that trying of your patience, and that's the results of it for an old person. Even though she, according to him, he was saying how the other day she said she can't believe that people are selling soda pops for $1. I mean, just a couple of days ago they were just 15 cents. And so that's how she thinks, but still she has this neat concept of her husband, which isn't alive anymore. He was a good guy. So I wanted to say that. God bless you all. Maybe it would be important to note how generally it is reversed today. Reversed? Somewhat the husbands. There are probably abusing husbands around. I'm sure there are, but a husband barely has to be abusive, and his wife has a whole flock of people just like right there to like tell her that he's abusive. You can run away.
Yeah, I could really relate to the parable. I think marriage has been really helpful for me spiritually. I wondered if it could be balanced out a little bit with that extreme view that that's the only way. If somehow in the church, single brothers that would be tested to serve the church, I'm sure a lot of the young people that were traveling around with the apostles were getting their faith tested in many other ways, along with Paul. That could have produced that same good fruit. Okay, I better let the mic go.
Thank you, Brother Buddy, for exhortation. On the first part about criticism, someone said once that when someone rakes you over the coal, especially when it's true, you could tell that person, well, that's only half the story. You don't know how sinful, how bad, how really bad I am. So when people think they're giving you a lot of criticisms, you could say to them, that's only half the story. I'm a lot worse than you're telling me. I think that would keep us in a right perspective of humility. And I noticed when you were speaking, one of your children said, Paul didn't say that. You know, I know that's, this is a Jewish rabbi that has no hope in the eternal world, but I guess there's a point that can be drawn. You know, in Timothy and Titus, the qualifications of the elder must be married man. But that rabbi, if he was here, if he was, you know, I would turn him to Isaiah 56 and just read a couple of verses from Isaiah 56. Thus saith the Lord, keep ye judgment and do justice. For my salvation is near to come, and my righteousness to be revealed. Blessed is the man that does this, and the son of man that lay hold on it, that keeps the Sabbath from polluting it, and keeps his hand from doing any evil. Neither let the son of the stranger, or that has joined himself to the Lord, speak, saying, the Lord has utterly separated me from his people. Neither let the eunuch say, I behold, I'm a dry tree. Listen up now. For the eunuch, for thus saith the Lord unto the eunuchs that keep my Sabbaths and choose the things that please me and take hold of my covenant. And for the children don't know what a eunuch is, it's someone who's not married. Well, I don't know if he's married, but he's just, I assume he's single. He either been castrated or something's happened to him. He could have been born like that. But anyway, that's what a eunuch is. And he says, thus saith the Lord unto the eunuchs that keep my Sabbath. Are you listening, Rabbi? And choose the things that please me and take hold of them. Even unto them will I give in my house and within my walls a place and a name better than the sons and daughters. What? A place and a name better than the sons and daughters. So if you want to boast about married people from the Old Testament, Mr. Rabbi, you're going to have to tear out Isaiah 56, because I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. And also for the sons and the strangers that join themselves to the Lord, to serve him and to love the name of the Lord, to be his servants, everyone that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it and take hold of my covenant, even them will I bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in the house of prayer, in their burnt offerings, etc. So it was a great lesson, but I pity the rabbi. The Lord be magnified.
I guess what I took away from it was that marriage was the... would be the opportunity for men to be, if they choose to be forced into servitude to their family, to their household. It gives them an opportunity to learn how to be a good servant. And I was thinking about this thing about I think young people, at least I did, struggle with the idea that we're losing time, or there's always something more valuable that they could be doing with their time. And if somebody asks you for a favor or wants you to help them with something, and I thought about this with my dad, like growing up, he would always way underestimate how long it would take for some project he was looking to get done to be finished, and he would always tell me, like, oh, it'll only take 10 or 15 minutes, you know, and it might be 3, 4, or 5 hours later and we're still working on the project. And I think that kind of frustrated me, because I always thought there'd be something better to do. But what I think, if you have a servant's mentality, it's you know, you're trying to help the person, regardless of how much time it takes, and that way you can meet whatever end goal there is. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that it costs you time, it costs you effort. To truly help somebody, and that's just something to think about.
Yeah, I appreciate the afterthoughts everybody shared, but yeah, Brother Buddy, thank you for that. Certainly the admonition to learn all this stuff, but not actually put it into practice is a sobering thought and very just essential. I mean, kind of just makes me think of what James says, if you know the good you ought to do, and of course the more you study the things of the Lord, you're increasing in that, which increases your opportunity to either succeed and store up fruit, or like he says, that he that knows good but doesn't do it sins. Then even going with what Jesus said about the one that knows, or the one that's ignorant, Jesus contrasts the one that doesn't know is ignorant but does evil will be beaten with few blows, but the one who knows much and then didn't do it will be beaten with many blows. So just that contrast of both opportunity and also increased responsibility. Yeah, thanks for that, Brother Buddy. And then, yeah, I guess the thought, I just makes me think of, I bumped into a writing, I didn't read the whole thing, from Clement of Alexandria years ago, but I read a good portion of it where he was making the argument of the great maturity development program that happens when you get married. And certainly, I think some of those examples that rabbi had is certainly true. Yeah, and then the other side, just thinking about which, it's like, okay, what did Paul mean by these things? You know, Jesus saying, Brother Robert mentioned about a eunuch, he says, you know, whoever can accept this should accept this, when he says those that would choose to be a eunuch for the kingdom of God's sake. And then you see these interesting statements by Paul in 1 Corinthians 7, where he's talking about marriage. He says in the beginning, he says, it's good for a man not to touch a woman, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife. So it seems like he's saying, well, for that reason, certainly, I'm sure he didn't mean just for that reason, but in that case, and you go down a little further, he talks about widows and the unmarried. Let's see, verse 8, but I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am, but if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. And he goes on, he talks about all these things, aspects about marriage in here. Further down, he says, let each one remain in the same calling which he was called. Were you called while a slave, do not be concerned about it, but if you can be made free, rather use it. And, you know, he goes on a little further and it's like, okay, let each one remain in his calling. Like, what does that have anything to do with marriage? Maybe, maybe not. Verse 25, now concerning virgins, I have no command from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one from the Lord in his mercy has been made trustworthy. I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Sometimes the idea of, that's verse 27. If you go down to verse 39, it says a woman is bound to her husband as long as she should live. So that verb there is the opposite of loosed, which sometimes is translated as divorced. It could also be, as Tertullian pointed out, referring to this passage, saying, "Where if I keep going on, let me keep reading. Tertullian refers to this with regard to being loose because of death, which is what verse 39 was talking about. It says, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loose. Are you loose from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. So some people understand that loosed in the sense of divorce, and then they come to the conclusion that, well, if you marry, you have not sinned, so divorce and remarriage is okay. Tertullian understood that to mean, no, you're loose because your spouse died, which is what verse 39 was talking about. So it's real important when you see these two, sometimes they translate them differently, but underlying in Greek, they're the same words. Deo is bound. Versions of that can have to do with like the shackles when Paul talked about his not handcuffs, but shackles that he probably wore or whatever, being bound in jail like that idea, something being tied versus luo. Is it loose because of death, or is it loose because of someone putting their spouse away or whatever? But so anyway, when he's saying if you've married because you were loosed, apparently because of being a widow or a widower, you have not sinned. So it's interesting he makes that statement. If you really just marinate on that, why would he say that? Why would you say you have not sinned because you married? If the perspective is like the only correct path, and I don't think any of us are saying that, is to be married, why on earth would you even make a statement like that? And it must be because somebody thought that, well, if your spouse passed away and died, it's good for you to remain alone, which Paul seems to encourage that in verse 8. We read that already. For virgins and widows to remain even as I am, but if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry. That would seem why he's making that statement. It's like if you marry because your spouse died, is the implication. I think it's reasonable. Otherwise, you come up with a divorce and remarriage conclusion that's opposite of what Jesus taught. But yeah, you haven't sinned, so that's just interesting. There's some other things in this chapter that seems to encourage widows and virgins to remain as they are, but have the opportunity to marry. But certainly the maturity development road of all the challenges that you're going to have when you get married, whether it's from the husband perspective or from the father perspective, is just true. And that's awesome.